The first matter this morning is case number 16-3330, United States v. Olea Monerez. Counsel, if you're ready, please enter your appearance.
May it please the Court. My name is Grant Smith, and I represent the appellant Vicencio Olea Monerez. In this case, the jury heard closing arguments, it was instructed by the court, and it started deliberations. It then sent two notes to the court indicating it was unable to locate the evidence as to count eight. It was impermissible for the judge to locate this evidence for the jury. After deliberations have started, a court cannot guide a jury to evidence it had failed to locate.
Do you agree that the trial court can comment on the evidence?
I agree that in charging the jury.
No, my question is, do you agree that the trial court, during the trial, during any type of deliberation, can comment upon the evidence?
Yes, I believe that's unarguable under Quercia.
Now, I've read the response to what the court did. Tell me exactly what was overreaching or prejudiced your client to the point that he did not receive a fair trial.
There's several concerns embedded in responding to these jury's questions. Exactly as to this case, there's a concern that it invades the deliberative process of the jury.
Okay, now that's what I want you to tell me specifically, her response, how it did.
And there's no difference here between the judge's response to the jury note and having the judge or the government in the jury room. The jury saying, hey, we can't locate the evidence as to this count, and the government saying, here it is. That 13th
juror. Was it admitted into evidence?
It was admitted into evidence.
And the jury is entitled to have the exhibits or the evidence that's been admitted, aren't they?
Yes, they are. But what's, as Miller recognizes, what's problematic with these responses is that they unwittingly mandate certain facts to be taken as true. If you look to this case, there's only one exhibit that details the drug quantity. That's the lab report. This exhibit was admitted through the testimony of Deputy Comerio, and he stated that this lab report came from the drugs that were procured on December 12, 2013, and he was able to tell this because the lab report number. In order for the jury to find that this exhibit was relevant to this charge count, it had to believe the testimony of Deputy Comerio. The judge's response assures the jury that this is the case. It says you have to believe that because I'm telling you.
Well, counsel, let me read the response. I don't know that it quite says what you just said. The response was there was testimony concerning count number eight, and there were exhibits admitted concerning count number eight, which you have, except for the drug exhibit, which you can view upon request. Was there anything misleading about that?
Two parts to the
message. Is there anything misleading or deceptive about what the judge said?
Yes, there is.
What is that?
First, as noted in our reply brief and in the opening brief, there's not at least four witnesses that testified concerning this count.
Didn't say anything about witnesses. Are we talking about the first question from the judge?
Sorry, I was jumping ahead to the second response.
Well, why don't we take them one at a time? And what I read to you is the response to the first question. There's no reference to any witnesses.
And to that it's misleading, as I was alluding to before, in that in order to concern this count, it has to be relevant to this count. In order it to be relevant, you have to believe the
testimony. I asked a very simple question. Is there anything that was deceptive or misleading about what the judge said?
Yes, as to that being relevant or concerning. Embedded in that is you have to believe that testimony.
Where does he say that? He doesn't express an opinion on whether the jury has to believe it or not. It says concerning. In your brief, you say that the response was supporting, but that isn't what the judge said. The judge said concerning.
No, and there's other concerns here besides if it's misleading or not.
I only asked you that question. Is there anything misleading or deceptive or inaccurate about the response to the first jury question? I mean, it's kind of a yes or no, isn't it? And if it's yes, what is it?
My position is it's yes because it's injecting the judge's impression of whether or not this is relevant. But I understand your position in that.
I'm not taking a position. I'm asking you a question.
Yes, it is misleading, and that is putting that imprimatur of the court on this fact that this admission is relevant. That could be open for interpretation. Other people could say that this exhibit doesn't concern it because we don't believe Deputy Comerio's testimony that this lab report actually came from these drugs.
Well, I can tell you, counsel, I'm concerned with that response because I've read it, I've looked at it, and I can't tie up what you're saying in regards to the position that you're taking as to the note number one. I'm just not buying it.
And we can concede that point in Mr. Oleo Manera's, not that we are, but we can, and he's still entitled to relief. Because if you move on to the second jury instruction, there is a misleading nature to this instruction, and that it's arguable whether or not there were four witnesses, at least four witnesses, that testified as to this specific count. As the government agrees in its response brief, Agent Swanson didn't testify to this specific count. He said he wasn't there, and that Deputy Comerio was going to testify about it. In addition, you have the confidential informant, Lee, who states that, well, maybe it was this day, maybe it was the other, I don't know. The only testimony concerning these exact dates was from the government, and it's questioning. But moreover, besides the misleading nature, there are very particularized concerns when it comes to allowing this sort of supplemental argument or this sort of response to a jury's question. As Miller notes, the first concern is that it's allowing the judge to step into the role of the government. The government has to prove each count beyond a burden, or its burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. It's afforded the opportunity at closing arguments to summarize its case, show how it's met this burden, and assist the jury. Here the government expressly elected not to take that opportunity.
Counsel, I hate to keep interjecting into your argument when you're on a roll, but you're saying that the government concedes there weren't four witnesses that said that. Was there two witnesses?
At best, there was two witnesses.
So at best. So the difference and the distinction that you're drawing is instead of there being four witnesses that testified that, there were actually two witnesses who said that.
Yes, and that's problematic because it's bolstering the government's
case. Now, we're talking about exhibit on the second issue, exhibit number 98 and exhibit number 99, right?
Right.
Okay, those were both admitted into evidence, correct?
Correct.
And are you arguing that the court could not, by its own initiative and authority, tell the jury there's two exhibits, number 98, 99, which are admitted into evidence, that you're entitled to look at it if you want to?
A court can absolutely do that in charging the jury. At this point, though,
An answer to a question. Your position is the court absolutely could not do that.
A court absolutely can, in charging the jury, say there were these exhibits.
It's not charging. The jury already has an instruction. The question is, as it's framed here, you're trying to tell us that we're going to write a rule of law that the judge cannot tell the jurors when they can't find exhibits. There are two exhibits, number 98, 99, which you're entitled to look at if you want to. Now go back and deliberate.
That might be permissible in your hypothetical. But when the jury starts deliberating and gives a note to the court saying, we can't find this evidence, exactly as the case was in Miller, a court cannot pinpoint that evidence.
What's your best case that says the court cannot do that by pointing the jury to an exhibit?
United States v. Miller.
I don't agree that that's what that exactly says, but go ahead.
The exact phrasing of Miller is that a court cannot direct the jury to evidence previously unidentified as supporting accompanying indictment.
Previously unidentified. This evidence has already been admitted into evidence. It's there for everybody to look at. I assume that the jury must not have asked for the exhibits below. Were you the trial counsel below?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, we try not to shoot the messenger up here, that's for sure, but go ahead then.
The unidentified portion of that statement, that word there, is unidentified by the jury when they're in their deliberations. And the concern underlying this is that you are invading their deliberative process. They're coming forward saying, in the course of our deliberation, we can't find this. And the judge, or essentially the prosecutor, through the mouth of the judge, is saying, well, here it is. Use this to determine whether or not.
Can you explain to me the difference between saying, here it is, and that not being a comment on the evidence?
If you look back in the common law and in Quercia, there was a distinction between.
Tenth Circuit law. Can you tell me the difference between that not being a comment on the evidence?
Comments on the evidence, you see vestiges of them in jury instructions such as flight or a witness who's a drug user or credibility determinations. It's saying this is how you can view this evidence. The summary power of a court was at the end of trial, a court could summarize the evidence for the jury. This more like what happened here. However, as Quercia makes clear, that has limitations. The Eighth Circuit case, Lewis, which is binding because it was pre-Tenth Circuit split, says you can't do that once the jury has started deliberating. And the concern there is you are entering that deliberative process. Moreover, you're allowing the government a supplemental closing argument, an impermissible supplemental closing argument. As Miller recognizes, the majority of the evidence in criminal cases is admitted by the government.
Counsel, would you agree that the judge's response to the second question did not include the expression of any opinion on the weight of the evidence?
Express opinion, no. But included in that.
Or the guilt of the defendant. The judge didn't suggest one way or the other whether the defendant was guilty.
Expressly, no.
So I'm trying to understand where, if you were writing the rule here as to what judges can and cannot do, what it would be. I mean, would the judge here, in response to this question, only be permitted under the rule you would write to respond by saying, you just need to consider all the evidence, thank you very much?
The rule I would write would be, after a jury has started deliberating, a court cannot pinpoint specific evidence to support a charge count.
All right. But what would be an appropriate response then to the question that this judge received?
The appropriate response to the first question.
No, the second. I'm on the second. Let's
the second
to the
question?
Second. Yeah.
The first, the appropriate response is no. They asked whether the indictment was misdated. The most concrete, specific answer to that is simply no.
Oh, you. I thought your previous answer was the judge is supposed to say, I cannot answer your question. You must rely on the evidence as submitted to you. I thought that's the direction. I mean, doesn't no give them an answer?
It depends on the nature of the question. Here, the first question is seeking evidence.
Okay.
In that case, the answer is you must rely on your collective recollection of the case.
Okay.
It's probably permissible to provide that same answer to the second question, but the most direct answer to that is no, as both the government and the prosecutor stated when they were discussing the correct response.
You mean, well, let's make sure, because the question is, could count 8 be an incorrect date? And what you're saying is the judge could have said no.
Yes.
Or should have said no.
Should have said no. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is Carrie Capwell. I represent the United States. The District Court's responses to the jury's questions concerning Count 8 did not mislead the jury, did not add to the evidence, did not distort the evidence, did not interfere in any way with the jury's role as the fact finder. did not provide the ultimate answer regarding any factual question to the jury, and did not show any expression of impartiality.
I'm not so much concerned, counsel, with the first question that went to the jury. I'm a little concerned with the second question. You might wade through that, subject, of course, to my colleagues' questions in one, but I need a little more guidance in regards to the response to question number two.
Yes, Your Honor. So the court's response to question number two was that there was testimony from at least four witnesses, and that was accurate. That was not misleading. And although my colleague argues that the government, that we conceded that Agent Swanson did not testify as to count eight, that is not correct. In our brief, we included Agent Swanson as one of the witnesses who testified regarding count eight because he testified, although he wasn't there on December 12th for that particular buy or purchase of methamphetamine, he did testify regarding a December 10th meeting between the confidential source, Craig Lee, and the defendant. And during that meeting, Agent Swanson discussed, during that meeting, the confidential source made a payment to the defendant, but also discussed a future transaction. So that would be evidence that would bear upon count eight and whether there was another buy that the defendant participated in. And moreover, and more importantly, I believe, Agent Swanson testified that on December 17th, after the controlled purchase at issue here in count eight, he supervised the confidential source paying $1,400 to the defendant, and that payment was for the December 12th purchase of methamphetamine. So again, that corroborates that the defendant did sell drugs to the confidential source.
Well, let me ask you this in regards to that response. Do we review our standard of review in regards to, is it an abuse of discretion, or is it a de novo review, or is it as a matter of law that there was error committed here?
Your Honor, if this court's case law states that it's abuse of discretion, that the judge's responses, in charging the jury and also in responding to questions from the jury, those matters are within the sound discretion of the district court, and that this court applies an abuse of discretion standard.
What is your best case that you can direct us to as to the judge's response to a question from the juror as to the, in the federal courts, the capability of the response and what is permissible and not permissible?
I think, Your Honor, our response draws from a number of different cases. I mean, it draws from the Supreme Court Quercia case, which is what this court has cited repeatedly, both in the criminal and civil context, to stand for the proposition that a trial judge can comment on the evidence, has a responsibility to guide the jury to an intelligent decision, whether it's legal or factual, but also has cautioned that the district court must take great care in not, when guiding the jury and trying to be of assistance to the jury, when the jury expresses confusion and wants help, that the response must be neutral, not express any partiality, can't distort the evidence. And that's what the district court here followed, those rules. The district court here, her responses were pretty much as bland as they could be. They showed absolutely no partiality. The first response was basically their testimony and their exhibits.
Well, counsel, the second response, though, got more specific. And there was mention of at least four witnesses. There was a reference to two exhibits. Why isn't there a concern that the jury might infer that the judge was saying that the evidence specified, the at least four witnesses, exhibits 98, 99, actually supported the charge in count eight?
I think there are a couple things, Your Honor. First of all, in that second response, the district court included the admonition that you must rely on your collective recollection of all the evidence, including the testimony and the admitted exhibits. And that instruction, along with the original instructions advising the jury that they were the finders of fact, that was their job, they were the sole judges of credibility or believability, and that no remark that the district court said should be taken as an opinion, that helps.
I'm curious, a similar question I asked to Mr. Smith, just where the line gets drawn here. What if the judge had said, there are at least four witnesses, oh, and let me tell you who they are, and starts listing names. And maybe even says, oh, well, one of them testified on Wednesday and the other was on Tuesday. Oh, and that one talked a little bit about the. How far can the judge go? Where does the line get drawn? And how would you write the rule if you have to draw a line?
Well, Your Honor, I think the responses must remain neutral, not one-sided, not convey at any point an expression of what the court believes is the ultimate resolution of that fact. So the district court can assist the jury with memory issues that the jury is having. And we've seen that in many cases where this court has said the district court has discretion to allow the jury to receive readbacks of testimony. That's an aid to the jury's memory. So the district court has broad discretion there. So when it goes
well, but isn't there a significant difference between a readback from a transcript and the judge? I mean, it's the judge saying, well, there are these four witnesses and there are these two exhibits and consider them. You consider them.
Yes, Judge, I think it really goes to how did the district court phrase its response? What wording did it use? At any point, did it communicate to the jury that these exhibits were strong evidence of guilt on count 8. Here, the district court judge, after seeing two different questions from the jury in which they were having trouble locating specific exhibits related to the count, merely told the jury there was exhibit 98 and 99, and you can ask for, you already have one of the exhibits, you can ask for the other one. I think this is much different than the two cases that the defendant relies on from the D.C. Circuit, Miller and Ieni. And also, there was a first.
How would you distinguish Miller?
Yes, and can I just add to, and
sure.
Different from a First Circuit case, United States versus Argentine, which also is somewhat similar to the Miller case. But it's different because in those cases, the district court judge and the error that was found there was the district court judge was actually foreclosing the jury's independent evaluation of the evidence because the trial court there was telling the jury, yes, this specific call that happened on this date and this time is the call that the grand jury intended to be the subject of count 22. I'll make that up. And in the Miller case, it was most of the charges at issue were the unlawful use of a communications facility. And so there, the dates and times of the call were very important. And the district court judge there was doing two things, confirming for the jury that the calls that the jury had identified in its notes, even though at times the time was different of the call that the jury had identified and the one in the indictment, the judge went ahead and said, yes, that is the call. You've got the right one. So right there, the jury could stop any further deliberation because the judge actually confirmed that that is the call. And then what the D.C. Circuit further found more problematic was when the jury's note did not identify any specific call but just said, we don't know which call matches to this count. And then the district court said, oh, it's this call, and actually identified the call by number, date, and time, even though at times the timing of the call, and I believe one was even 6 days earlier. So the judge there was really interfering with the jury's own evaluation of the evidence and an element there, which was, you know, on or about a certain date and time.
Well, now, counsel, that there you've just put your finger on what's concerning me as to this second note, because they're talking about a specific date of a buy, I believe. And they're confused. The jury is having trouble because there's a February 12th date versus a December 12th date. And that's the burden that the government's got to carry. If you charge that there was a buy, and count 8 does that, They can't find, they're looking for the proof beyond a reasonable doubt that there's evidence that there was a buy on one date and not the other. Now, the neutrality that you just went back to, it says, the answer is there was testimony from at least four witnesses about this date. We're talking about the date. There was Exhibit 98, drug evidence, which is available for your review upon request. Exhibit 99 is in the lab report. Then they, then she does give the neutral part you must rely upon. Now, if that's the jury's concern, we can't find evidence to prove an element of the charge that you've got. How is that statement neutral?
Because there, the court is just saying these are the two exhibits that were introduced
yes.
concerning this count. The court isn't saying, and on this date, in fact, the defendant did sell this quantity of drugs to this
confidential
Did
those exhibits
source.
Have the correct date that they were looking for?
Actually, I believe the lab report did not have the date of the sale. It had the date, I believe, that the lab received the drug evidence, which was later in December.
So, all right.
Right, and I don't know as to the physical exhibit whether that had the date on it or not. But the bottom line was that the jury itself still had to find each element of the charge beyond a reasonable doubt on its own. The judge may have assisted their memory in terms of these are the exhibits that the government introduced, but did nothing more than that.
Now, there's one overriding question. That this gentleman was convicted of so many counts. What difference is it going to make if we should say, well, there was error in count number 8? I think he was convicted in 29 counts, wasn't he?
21, I believe.
All right. Yes. So, what's the advantage or what's going on here? I mean, why is that count 8 out of 21 and they all carry huge sentencing?
Yes, Your Honor. It will not make a difference to his sentence.
Why?
Because he received a life sentence on, I believe, 8 different counts, including count 8. So if count 8 is reversed, vacated, it won't make a difference to his sentence. He still received life sentences on a number of other counts, plus 30 years based on 924C counts, which were stacked. So there is no difference there. I'm getting close to my time. I would submit, though, that even if the court were to find that somehow there was an error or that the district court abused its discretion, that it's harmless because here we know from the record that the defendant did not object and stated that it had no objection to the jury being told that they were allowed to ask for readbacks of testimony. And if that had happened, the jury could have heard again from Agent Swanson about what Agent Swanson's participation was. And then their memory would have been jogged that Task Force Officer Comerio was the main law enforcement officer who was involved on December 12th. So the defendant had no objection to the readbacks, and the readbacks surely would have provided the jury with the information that they needed to make their independent evaluation. And I would also like to point out that in Miller and the Argentine case, that would not have been the true. Readbacks would not have solved the problem in Miller because in our case, there was no new evidence that or new argument that the jury was being given in the judge's responses. Everything was already in the record versus Miller. Readbacks would not have answered the jury's questions there because they were confused about different calls and different times that were
offered. Can I yes. just ask you, why even go down the road of pointing out evidence? I mean, I think your opposing counsel says just say no. Just answer the question. Why wouldn't that have worked?
Your Honor, certainly the district court could have done that and just looked at question number 2 from the jurors very narrowly and said, nope, there's no wrong date here. Just proceed with your deliberations. And that would have been fine, too. But what the district court did here, given the earlier question, the district court and the parties seemed to recognize, okay, they can't find this evidence. And I think there's a discussion, too, about an exhibit list that the court had provided to the jury and that whereas it had identified dates for other counts, there was no date for this count. And so that was likely what was causing the kind of the memory lapse here. And it was about a one-month-long trial with several counts. So it's reasonable that the jury needed some help in terms of their memory.
Thank you, counsel.
I see that I'm out of time.
Good
Thank
timing.
You.
You've got it right on the zero. Mr. Smith, you have rebuttal time.
Just one point on rebuttal, and that's to emphasize that in the second note, the court did tie that exhibit to the charge count, to that exact date. And that's extremely problematic. It was the government's job to prove that count, the drug quantity, and the judge stepped into the government's role by tying that exhibit to December 12, 2013.
How would you respond to the harmless error points that Ms. Capwell was making?
The potential of the availability of readbacks is immaterial because it's not what the jury could have done. The harmlessness standard is articulated in Kodiakos, and it's that whether this error affected this jury's decision in the context of this case. Here, the jury said twice it wasn't able to find this evidence. The government said it didn't even know what count 8 was, and was only able to by the judge committing the error of guiding the jury to the evidence supporting this count.
Thank you, counsel. This case will be submitted. We thank counsel for your arguments, and counsel are excused.